Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you listening to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe and give us some feedback. Also, the Bald-Faced Truth podcast, it's brought to you by Shoe Mill, my favorite shoe store with locations in Portland and Salem and online at shoemill.com. Shoe Mill, where we put the world at your feet.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to the Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
One of my favorite guests, because he's knowledgeable, outspoken, interesting, is Jeff Schwartz, former Oregon Duck NFL offensive lineman. He joins us now. How are you, Schwartz?
I am glad to be here. How are you doing? Actually,
I'll tell you what.
Most happy that it appears that schools are now starting to talk about opening up again, and that means that we can have football. That's what I'm actually terribly excited about.
Yeah. I think I'll be honest, the NBA season got interrupted. I don't really care if the NBA comes back at this point because I feel like it's going to be interrupted. I want them to have a whole next season. I want the NFL season to happen, the college football season to happen. But you're right. When I start hearing about kids going back to school, I also think about no homeschooling. Are you homeschooling kids right now in your household?
Yeah, so we got pretty lucky. About a month before schools closed, and I kind of just was reading the news and seeing which way this is going, I actually told a friend of ours who was an elementary school teacher, like, look, if this goes the way I think it's going to go, we're not going to have school anymore. Can you homeschool our kids? And she told me I was crazy. My wife was like, what? That's not needed. And, of course, I'm not right off, but I was right here. So we've been lucky enough to have a friend help homeschool. I'm still working. My wife's a nurse. She's not at the hospital though, but she's still working. She's been going to work every day. So I couldn't have done it. I really feel for parents that have had to try to to make it work. Obviously, but I got lucky.
Jeff Schwartz with us, former Oregon Duck NFL offensive lineman. The draft happened. I want your takeaway with the draft. Let's start with this. Did you like seeing these GMs in their homes? Do you want that to go away, or is that a keeper?
I think the draft format's a keeper. I'll tell you what. I think everyone was more relaxed. They were more loose. Obviously, Goodell, I think, scored huge points for just looking like a human for once.
Sometimes. Yes.
He's kind of robotic. I thought he did a good job. I thought seeing the emotion of everyone involved, it's a lot different when you have a camera in your face and you're dressed in your nice clothes and you're in, not New York anymore, but you'll be Cleveland next year or would have been Vegas this year, and the camera's on you, right? Like, the camera's on you. And yeah, the reaction's natural, but your parents know the camera's there. Your girlfriend knows. Like, it's not the same thing. Now, you're in your house. Most players were not wearing, fancy clothes. And I think we got more natural reactions, and we got more of them. There was more cameras sent out. And more, the one thing I could do without, in my opinion, is all the sad stories. I mean, I understand that a lot of the stories do shape the way and the lives of these athletes. And I'm not discounting that that's a big part of who they are. But in that moment, it's a moment of celebration. And unless, they asked you to talk about this in their life, I think it should be used to celebrate who they are as a player and not really the tragedy that they've had, as a child. So that I could have done without. I get why. I heard it was even worse on ABC. I did not watch the ABC telecast. I just watched the ESPN one. But I liked it. It was nice that they put it on, which I always expected they would. And that they embraced the technology. They embraced the moment. Goodell obviously embraced some booze. And I liked it.
Jeff Schwartz with us, 8 years in the NFL as an offensive lineman. Can catch him on SiriusXM with his show as well. And Schwartz, you are a guy who was in the league. You know how important fit is. I watched Justin Herbert to the Chargers, and I kind of left going, hey, that could have been a lot worse for Herbert. That's a pretty nice situation for him. You agree with that?
I do. I think if you're looking at Miami or almost at San Diego for like the thousandth time in a row,
yes,
the Chargers, Los Angeles, I'm going to say Oakland Raiders, like, for till the end of time, I think. And it's a great fit. If you look at compared to the Dolphins, look at the Chargers. They upgraded the right tackle and the right guard, significantly upgraded the right tackle and right guard. They have Keenan Allen, Mike Williams, and they franchise Hunter Henry. They have Austin Eckler as well. And they drafted Joshua Kelly, by the way, from UCLA, who I think can be really good in the NFL. You have Tyrod Taylor there to kind of allow you to just take your time getting, you know, into the NFL groove. And they can still go sign a left tackle. There's plenty of guys available, in my opinion. Jason Peters, Donald Penn, to make that happen. You have a really good defense who's also upgraded in the offseason with some additions as well. And, you know, you're allowed to kind of grow in the role because of Tyrod Taylor. You know, Tua is going to kind of be forced into playing, I think, much sooner than he wants to be. The offensive line is not as good. But I also think, you know, I have been very critical of people who have used the, you know, excuse or whatever you want to call it, about, you know, Herbert's not a leader, or, you know, Herbert's never left Eugene. You know, I get all that. But if you want to look for a place for a soft landing for your first time leaving Eugene, I know it's Los Angeles, but the Chargers are like the 11th favorite team in Los Angeles. Like, it's like no one cares. So I know it's a big city and it'd be different than living in Eugene, but, you know, you can live near the facility. You can live, you know, down the South Bay and travel to, I guess actually they're not even Home Depot Center anymore. They're going to be in Inglewood. So, you know, you still live in the South Bay and get to Inglewood, but, you know, it's kind of a softer landing that would be Miami. And so I think this worked out perfectly for Justin. I wish him a lot of luck. I hope he does really well.
You know, it's interesting because the Jeff Schwartz is Smarter Than You podcast had a little thing that I watched this morning about mentorship. And I was thinking about Herbert. Yes. I was thinking about Tyrod Taylor. You've lived that. What do you mean by that in your podcast? What is a proper mentorship in the NFL?
Yeah, I think we often confuse what this actually is because people try to look at their job and you say, hey, I was mentored in my job. Guys, it's not the same job. I've never compared the NFL to anything else because it's not like anything else. And especially quarterback position, where you basically know that if a guy's drafted in the first round, he's there to take your job. Now, Tyrod's been through this before, but a proper mentorship, in my opinion, and again, it's not in anyone's contract to do this. So Tyrod Taylor is not forced to mentor Justin Herbert. Aaron Rodgers, which is the clip that you watched, is not forced to mentor Jordan Love. In fact, we often see that veteran quarterbacks do not embrace the role of a mentor. So here's what a mentor, in my opinion, is it's someone who takes a vested interest in how that particular rookie or second-year player plays the NFL. And by vested interest, I mean something more than just normal communication between, you know, how we would talk in the film room. So if I'm Tyrod Taylor and Justin Herbert in the room, right? I go out of my way to meet with Justin Herbert. I go out of my way to stay extra and watch film with him. I go out of my way at practice to make sure I stand next to him and we dissect each and every play that he just had. I make sure that I'm available any time of day to take a phone call from him. I make sure that I take him to dinner and meet his family, you know, make him part of my life, like a vested, like Jordan Groves did that for me when I got to Carolina. Now, I wasn't a first-round draft pick. I wasn't threatening his job, but he pulled me into his lifting group. I watched film with him all the time. I went over his house. I went on vacation with him and a couple of the other guys. Like, he saw an interest in making me a better player, and that really helped me. Now, for quarterback, I will say, John, that we often see that a lot of these guys are not mentored and turn out to be great anyways. So if Justin Herbert's going to be good, it's going to be because he's going to be good. It's not because Tyrod Taylor is going to help him. Now, it might speed up the process that Tyrod Taylor will help him. But, you know, just answering his questions in the meeting room, in my opinion, is not really a mentorship. I would do that for any young player, even if I'm not mentored. If they ask me a question in the meeting room about what we're installing, yeah, of course I'd answer the question. But I don't think, in my opinion, that doesn't feel like a mentorship to me.
Jeff Schwartz with us, former Oregon Ducks offensive lineman. I cringed when I heard the criticism of Troy Dye and his desire to play. The guy had a club on his hand, and I cringed when I heard Herbert's not a leader, and I said, well, how much did they watch him? What do you think when you hear all that criticism leading into the draft and after it?
Well, the Troy Dye thing was amazing to me because, like, there's documented times he's played injured. I don't even know where that came from. Plus, I mean, watch his film. He makes all the tackles. He's running all over the place. Like, I don't understand how you can argue that he doesn't want it enough or doesn't love it. But, you know, the leadership stuff started with Roy Taggart, who, you know, really didn't like his personality. And look, he was young and he was an introvert, and he probably wasn't the leader that Willie wanted him to be. But I tried my best to talk to, well, I did talk to people, you know, in the organization, in the on the team, the coaches, the one-on-one players. And I tried my best to get someone to just say something like, one time Justin was upset with himself and he sulked and, you know, I didn't like his leadership then. Like, I just something. I couldn't find anything. They all said that he's a fantastic leader, that they, you know, that they love playing with him, that they would do anything for him. And so you hear all these stories, and I hear, you know, national pundits say, well, he's a bad leader. I'm like, well, did you talk to anyone at Oregon? Because, look, coaches, when you talk to coaches in college about players, if you're a scout or you're a team or you're a media member, it's kind of their butt if they're wrong about it, right? So if you ask about Justin and they say, oh, great leader, he's fantastic, and turns out he's really not, then they look stupid for telling you that, right? So coaches are pretty honest, in my opinion, when they're off the record talking to people about personalities of players or anything else. And I think you've noticed this, obviously, in media, too. Off the record's a little different than on the record. And so
right.
I was just like, I just get something like, hey, tell me something. And they can't. So the leadership stuff was absolutely ridiculous, in my opinion. There are issues about Justin. His anticipation is a huge problem, in my opinion. It turns out film each and every week. I mean, there's reasons to explain it. There's reasons for optimism. There's reasons that he might not get better. But the leadership stuff, in my opinion, was not the reason why you wouldn't draft him high.
I'm looking at all the offensive linemen that were highly picked, and I think the public, the general public, has a better sense now than maybe a decade ago or two decades ago of the value of great offensive line play. What surprised you, or what did jumped out at you as far as the offensive linemen picked high in this draft?
Well, look, the top four were no surprise, in my opinion. You know, just the order, I think, was Andrew Thomas was not my favorite offensive lineman, but he was one of the top four. I think Tristan Wirfs is a great pick for Tampa Bay to play right tackle. I did not think Austin Jackson out of USC was quite frankly, ready to play in the NFL. He is ready to play in the NFL right now. He's got some technique concerns, in my opinion. You know, Isaiah Wilson actually has a really good fit for what the Titans want to do. So that was a good pick, in my opinion. You know, just specifically to Oregon, like, Talvin Throckmorton, who's right tackle at Oregon,
yeah,
played center as well at times. Every time I watch Oregon play, I actually watched two games this morning because I watched Penei Sewell against Wisconsin and Auburn. And, like, there's people that are slandering him. It's completely wild to me. But I just want to go back and be like, okay, let me see what they're saying. And, of course, they don't know what they're talking about. All Calvin Throckmorton did, John, is block the person in front of him. Like, that's our job. Our job is to block the person in front of us. And because he's not fast enough, he's not quick enough, he doesn't get drafted. And it's like, guys, just watch the film. Look at him. Against Wisconsin, they had a kid, you know, Zach Bonner, was a third-round draft pick, had 12 sacks last year. Like, he played great against him. Like, why don't you draft the guy? It's so silly to me how we focus so much on stats and numbers and just don't watch the film sometimes.
Jeff Schwartz is with us. You talked about Penei Sewell. I'm a big fan of Sewell. I think if the Heisman voters are smart, they'll be paying attention to him out of the gates. Not saying he can win it, but he should get votes. I put him third on my ballot this year. What do you see when you see Penei Sewell?
So I went today to try to find negatives about him. Like, I mean, it's weird when you have to go search them out, right? You're like, okay, can I find something that he doesn't do very well? And I think the one thing that I'll just say, start with this, and then just talk about everything he does really well, is that in the old offense, there weren't many one-on-one pass opportunities for him. And that's what you do in the NFL more than anything else. Is you have to drop back, you know, 30 times a game in a one-on-one pass situation. And when he played like a Bradley and I or Zach Bond, you know, the first rep wasn't great of drop back pass protection. And the rest of the game was fine. So, like, that's my one thing. It's like, the first rep against a good guy he hasn't seen in a while or doesn't win practice against, he doesn't, you know, he kind of is not used to speed yet. And then he's perfectly okay afterwards. And this year, I think, as Kayvon Thibodeau keeps improving, he'll get his practice reps against one of the better defensive ends of the country each and every day. It's not a concern. So what he does really well, there's many things. One is he flies off the ball. When it is time to run block, he is running off the ball, which is great today. I posted a videotape of him pinching someone. He's also very good with using his hips and knowing when to extend his hips to get the power through his body on a run block or even a pass block. Yes, you use your hips more than you think in pass protection. And I'll tell you, the number one thing that I like about Penei is I talked to him. I went to the Oregon offensive line meeting Zoom the other day, and I've heard about what his work ethic is. He wants to be better. Like, he wants to be great. And he is very ahead in the mental game of being offensive lineman. And that, to me, is really impressive. Like, he wants to be great. He wants to improve. He wants to be better. And I think it's at his position and how good he is right now, it's very easy to get complacent. And I told him in that meeting when I did with the Oregon offensive line last week, because he asked me a couple questions, I said, look, dude, your deal is going to be complacency, right? It's like, can you make sure that each and every week you bring it? Because it's going to be boring for you. And he gets it. Like, he understands that he's that good. And so I think that that is a huge plus, in my opinion, is his mental processing and how much he wants to improve.
Jeff Schwartz with us, drafted in 2008. You go in the seventh round in 2008. You play 8 years in the league, Panthers, Vikings, Chiefs, Giants, Lions. You are a success story. When I say that to you, what advice do you have to guys who are picked fifth round, sixth round, who say, hey, Jeff, how do I stick in this league?
Well, for me, it's all about the mental. I was never the biggest. Well, I was the biggest, but I was never the fastest. I never was the strongest. But I knew what I was doing. And when coaches put you into practice or into a game and you're not going to be the most talented guy, you better not make mental mistakes, because you can't afford, you know, to make those mistakes. If you're a great athlete and you make a mental mistake or two, fine, because you have other outstanding players and other traits to make up for it. I didn't have that. I had to know what I was doing. I had to know what the guy next to me was doing. And more importantly, specifically in my position, but in more certain positions, I didn't know what the defense was doing. I had to study the defense. I had to look at safeties in my stance and see where their safeties are, the linebackers, and figure things out to know where guys were going before the snap. And so I tell young guys, hey, look, you have to know what you're doing. And again, it's not always what your job is, the guy next to you, because if you know, the more you know, the more comfortable you are, the faster you'll play. And the faster you'll play, the more splash plays you'll have. And a splash play is not a pancake, it's not an interception, it's not a tackle. It's really any time that a coach is watching film and says, hey, look at Jeff Schwartz here. Look at that block. Look at that pass breakup. He's where he's supposed to be. Look at this. It's when a coach has to take notice of you during film. And in this training camp, because it's going to be, there'll be no off-season program, I think camp will be on time, but there's a new CBA, there's less practice time, the veterans have had no reps. You're going to have little reps if you're on the threes. Like, you're not going to have a lot of reps. And so you better get in there, and you better know what you're doing, and you better be able to make some of these splash plays. And so that's why I think I survived. Look, I'm a seventh-round draft pick. Also was very injured. It wasn't like I had a healthy career. And to keep playing as long as I did, I attribute that a lot to just coaches being able to trust me and knowing that I wasn't, you know, I was not going to screw up on the field and wasn't going to screw up off the field.
One of the things that has come out of being home with the kids and wife is they introduced me to TikTok, and I know you have as well. You go down that rabbit hole, you can't get that time back, man.
Oh, it's like 30 minutes. Like, I go on maybe once or twice a day. I haven't been on it once today yet. And it's the same stuff over and over again. Like, it's not even, like, good. Like, you're just like, oh, the same dance again by someone else. And all right, I guess I'll watch this 8-second dance. It's just, it's utterly ridiculous that that's a thing. But look, now with name, image, and likeness, athletes are going to make money off it. You know, there's that Oregon softball has a player who's got like 100,000 TikTok followers. Like, she's going to make a ton of money off this. Good for her.
Schwartz, I really appreciate you making time, and I'm glad you and your family are doing well, and I appreciate your expertise, man. Always love having you on, and I think a lot of fans in the state have kept in touch with you and still follow you and listen to you and watch you to this day.
Thank you. I appreciate it, guys. Everyone stay safe out there, and let's hope we have football back. I'm crossing my fingers.
Jeff Schwartz, thank you, man. Former NFL offensive lineman, 8 years in the league. Leave it here. You got the BFT statewide. Jameis Winston signs a one-year deal with the Saints. Headed to the Saints. A lot of incentives there. One-year deal. Be worth somewhere between about a $1.1 and $3.4 million. Winston said the deal's not about money for him, but a chance to learn from Sean Payton and Drew Brees. He called it a, quote, Harvard education in quarterback school, end quote. Will he revive his career in New Orleans? Teddy Bridgewater did it. I'm more interested in why teams weren't interested in signing Winston as a potential starter or even a more attractive backup. Marcus Mariota found a home much easier, much more quickly. Winston to the Saints, where he will presumably, if he's interested in learning from Drew Brees, I think Drew Brees, the work ethic that Brees has, the fact that anybody who's ever played alongside Brees says what a student of the game he is, and maybe Winston picks some stuff up. I hope he does. Coming up, top of the hour, just on the other side of this quick break, we'll talk about the possibility of a year with sports or without sports. Both of those things are being floated.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.